Hey there, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. Welcome to another episode of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight we are talking about Season 5, Episode 7, Together or Not at All. We got a fun show for you tonight, so stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
For me, it's always a good episode when the credits start rolling and I have a giant smile on my face. I had a lot of fun tonight. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty good. A lot of good stuff to talk about.
I feel like something's weighing me down. Like, almost like there's like a thread that they just like threw in there to satiate my complaints. it's really heavy one.
Is it? It's keeping you grounded, Zach? Is that
you
where
might
you're
say
going?
That?
I don't know. I think it's keeping you down to earth. Is that sort of where you're going with it?
What earth? We blew it up.
That's very true. Hey there, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans. We're here to talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tonight, Season 5, Episode 7. Let's not waste any time. Let me go ahead and introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, the lovely Rachel Goodman joining us for the first time.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rachel Goodman. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram, at Rach Goodman, or on Facebook, at Rachel Ann Goodman. Do you want me to talk about what we were talking about earlier?
We'll talk about that when we're done with introductions. But sadly, Taran and Jesse were not able to join us tonight, and so Rachel is graciously helping us out and stepping in. So thank you so much, Rachel.
Yeah, Jesse is under the weather, so send him your well wishes, at JessKlein1, the number one, on Twitter.
And he Instagram.
Send him some positive vibes. Taran got a gig in New York, so whatever.
So send him tweets and tell him to break a leg. And tell him also to the death. And to her left, Zach Wilson.
Hey, guys. Welcome back. You can find me all over the internet at that Zach Wilson.
And I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag... I combine my words very weirdly. ABTV Marvel, for all of you guys watching and keeping track on everything on Twitter. Zach has got you guys covered on the live chat.
Yes, I have you on my phone, so I can't really see it as well. but I'll still be keeping an eye on you guys.
Before we get started, we have a live read for you guys. On January 16th, when the CW's newest superhero suits up, lightning's gonna strike. Don't miss the electrifying new series, Black Lightning. Black Lightning, aka Jefferson Pierce, had previously powered down his crime-fighting career for the last 9 years and had been saving lives the best way he knew how as the principal of the local high school. But in this city, when the hero's away, the gangs will play. And this dude's a family man, so when his people get caught in the crosshairs, it's time to take charge. Now the former hero is back in full force for a second round against corruption and violence, because lightning does strike twice. It's the dark days for the city of Freeland, but the storm is coming when Black Lightning brings his power to the people. Now, not only will the series Black Lightning spark you up, but also the soundtrack is full of slamming hip-hop cuts, like songs by Ramon Fortune and old-school hits from blues singer Nina Simone, Bobby Bland, and the great Isaac Hayes. On January 16th, the world will know Black Lightning. Season premiere after The Flash, only on the CW. So, also before we get started, Rachel, this is the first time you're on our panel. Give our audience a little bit of a glimpse into your history with the show.
So, I actually got into AfterBuzz TV because I used to watch the show.
What?
And you used to read my comments.
But it's better if I react, babe.
What?
That's how I found out about AfterBuzz, and I applied, and here I am. But I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since it first started airing back in, I think, 2013?
2012, 2013. Oh, it was so long ago, guys.
It feels like forever ago.
Yeah, want to do the math.
I was also telling Rachel off camera that my first AfterBuzz show was also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that was Season 1, Episode 5. I remember it fondly. What have your thoughts been on this season so far? Because we've had a little bit of a mixed feeling, because a lot of the episodes are fun, but ultimately we're like, where are they going with this, and are there going to be everlasting consequences? when you're dealing with a wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey sort of plot line.
So that's my issue with it, is that I'm not sure exactly what they're going to say with everything going on with Quake, and if it's going to be that she, we were talking about this earlier, if she's going to have to go back and be there to quake the earth if it's actually her, and then everything happens, and then they save them, and it's this whole twisty thing where it's kind of complicated.
You're not the only one wondering.
But in general, I loved the framework storyline, and I was much more interested in that, and I'm glad that they kind of like resolved a lot of things, and I'm a huge Fitzsimmons fan, so that I'm happy about, but I am not sure where they're going with this, and I don't know how they're going to sustain it for an entire season.
Yeah.
And how they're going to kind of make it interesting.
We're hoping it's just a pod and that we'll get back to things. But you're not the only one wondering about that, because we got several tweets over the course of the week going, guys, how can Daisy be the destroyer of worlds if she's in the future?
That's the best point that I hadn't thought of. I was so surprised that nobody had brought that up yet. But that's true. If Daisy is responsible for blowing up the world, and we've teleported her out of the past, then she's not there to break the world. So the whole time loop is broken.
It's problem solved. She's in the future.
But it's not fixed. So either there's a plot hole, which I think the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. writers have proven to us at this point that they're better than.
Or there's
some big twist coming that she's not responsible for it.
That's my thoughts are, either that she's not responsible for it, that maybe, I don't know, someone that has a little bit more grave consequences, it might be at fault here, and we got a little wink, nudge, nudge about that earlier in the episode.
I've been burned too many times before. Look.
Zach just has a lot of feelings, guys.
We're beating around the bush, but like, you guys have heard me talk about Graviton on this show enough times since like season one, when I was a fill-in in season one, and I was yelling about Graviton because they introduced the character right up top, and there's this cool like Easter egg thing, and then they fridged him. And put him off to the side.
I wouldn't say fridged him, they shelved him.
Yeah.
They literally put him on a shelf for like a little, for 4 seasons.
Yeah. But he was gone. And like, I get why they had to do it. Graviton is a massively complicated villain to pull off on a television budget, especially the budget of earlier seasons. But then they said they were going to bring him back last year. They were like, oh, yeah, that's going to totally pay off. And then it didn't. And now they've totally shown it again. So we know that they haven't forgotten about the Gravitonium. They know it. They showed it to us. And if that's not leading somewhere, I'm like, don't toy with my emotions, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it also, like, there's a whole bunch of reasons that it makes sense if Graviton is around. Like, you could... He could be the actual destroyer of worlds, and that nobody knew about him. If Graviton is around, and now we have Flint and Quake, there are theoretically three people who could either break the world, depending on how you want to look at it. So we'll see, I guess. There's a lot of like people who like mess with the earth.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Seismic waves and gravity and earth bending all thrown together. Maybe it's the three of them working together that will fix the world. I highly doubt that. But for me, like talking about whether or not Daisy's responsible, I've never bought that she was the destroyer of worlds because of that whole time loop thing. And I'm still sitting here going, is time linear and incapable of being changed and altered in this particular universe without the use of an Infinity Stone? Because we've seen that you can manipulate time via Doctor Strange sort of manipulation. But I don't think we're going to dig into that at all. But aside from that, I think for the most part, time has been linear, and we're not necessarily dealing with a multiverse scenario. I don't know. It's hard to say.
This is not a multiverse story anymore. They introduced that concept and then removed it immediately. Last episode, they removed it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as Fitz came from the past, just by waiting.
Yeah. There was no time travel involved.
Yeah, it left the idea of a multiverse behind, unless they're planning on somehow saying that it was.
But regardless, if she is responsible, she does need to go back in time to make that happen. And it is possible that that is a fixed point in time, to use Doctor Who sort of terminology.
But again, this has been my problem with this whole conceit, is that that can't happen because you're in the greater Marvel universe, so you can't break the world.
Yeah.
Because Black Panther's coming out in a month. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the moment where somebody sits down with Daisy and they start talking about, like, but if you're here and not in the past, how could you be the destroyer of world? And for there to just be a blue screen error, and that's, and it just glitches out the rest of the episode. And
so why hasn't anyone even brought this up yet, like, in the show?
Probably because every time they think about it, they're like, nope.
It's my worry that it's like a genuine plot hole that nobody thought of. I trust these writers more than that, I'm assuming that there's some kind of twist coming.
And again, we know that they're also fans of a lot of other science fiction work, again, with all the little Doctor Who references that get thrown in there. Time travel is a tricky plot device, and these writers have been writing for this show for, you know, this is their fifth season now. I feel like they're better than that. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. The point that we're making is that Graviton has been, or Gravitonium at least, has been reintroduced as a component on the lighthouse. And so if it's not a Chekhov's gun, that's bad writing.
Yeah.
Or it's just a fun wink. I don't know.
Yeah, at this point, we need to see that payoff. It's been too long.
Yeah, it would be one thing if, like, if they hadn't made that announcement that there was going to be payoff. Otherwise, it could just be a fun sort of Easter, like, a fun nod to season one.
Yeah, but we've been dealing with Chekhov's molecule since season one.
When a supervillain is introduced at the beginning of the series, by the end of that series, that supervillain needs to destroy some stuff.
That is not true in comic books at all.
But anyway, so let's dig a little bit more into the episode proper, because a good chunk of this episode is Fitz and Gemma and Daisy on the run from Falnox guy, Mastin, I believe is his name. Which, by the way, he had like a cool mohawk. I totally dug his character design. I'm kind of bummed he's dead, because he had a really awesome character design.
I don't know. I wasn't expecting him to die that way either.
Death by Sonara's balls. Oh, that poor Kree warrior.
He never even knew what hit him.
Balls to the back.
Although that's an interesting... We'll talk about it a little bit more, but yeah, that's interesting that Sonara essentially stabbed him in the back.
Yeah, both of those characters went down through strategy over strength, and that's the thing. Yeah. Like, his brother, like, rips on Kasaya's, like, you're not a warrior. It's like, he could even be a warrior. He's just not an idiot. Like, that's the thing. Like, a warrior doesn't have to be the kind that charges into death. A good warrior knows when to use tactics or to retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying Kasai is a good warrior. He's kind of a D-bag. But I don't know. Like, I liked his brother Falnox bodyguard. Like, he was cool. Like, the black
the
design.
Eyes, yeah.
He looked like he was like out of the '80s. Like, that was an '80s guy.
You're absolutely right. Like, he looks like he stars.
That's a 1985 punk. Like, that's what he is.
He was an alien 1980s cyberpunk man. Like, and an amalgamation.
Cyberpunk Kree.
Oh, that's so cool. Oh, I'm so bummed he's dead. But that, I really enjoyed this whole chase sequence. Rachel, what did you think of the great character bits that we got?
So I love that the whole group was back together, and I especially love that we got Fitz and Simmons back with Daisy, and when Deke, I think I'm saying that right, when he finally shows up again, it's like, who's that guy? And he points to Fitz, it's like, no.
Did anyone else notice that they have, like, the exact same wardrobe?
Yeah!
Like, Fitz with the bounty hunter mask on, and him with his, like, not Star-Lord mask. exactly the same.
Pretty much.
They even have the same coat.
Gemma kind of had the same look, though, too, with the jacket.
Did she?
A little bit. Like, once she was able to ditch the servant garb, she was like, hey, everybody's dressing like a space pirate. I want to dress like a space pirate, too.
Yeah, because I guess that's how space pirates dress in the future.
Everybody's got this, like, space grunge sort of aesthetic going for them. You mentioned Fitz and Simmons being back together, and yes, there wasn't a ton of it in this episode, but man, it's just gratifying to finally see them both sharing the screen together for, even if it's just for a couple minutes.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The only thing that bugs me, and like we've been talking about this earlier too, is that the whole thing with Fitz, like I get that it's been 6 months, but I feel like he should still be struggling a little bit more with what happened to him in the framework, even a little bit. And I know it's kind of coming out at times, but I'm not seeing it enough as I think we should be seeing it.
That's a fair assessment. I guess one could argue that because his friends immediately went missing afterwards, is that he's sort of like pushed that to the back of his mind, or he's repressing it a little bit until they're out of crisis mode. But yeah, I think that's a fair complaint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're waiting on you.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with outer space society world base under siege, but not, I don't know what to call this, the whole situation, like, personal matters.
Well, and Fitz did spend, I mean, he did time for it. He was in jail for a considerable amount of time. So, yeah, and he went into cryogenic stasis for, like, 75 years.
That bugged me, too. Because it's not so much that that happened, but when they woke Fitz up, and he's just like, oh, okay, and he just gets up and goes.
He can walk around without, like, any rehabilitation.
Well, the Chromacons, I guess, have real good cryogenic technology. It's, like, right in the name.
That's pretty good. Like,
but they're, like, thousands, they're tens of thousands of years ahead of us in technology. So, like, for all we know, it is, like, this perfect, like, you go to sleep, and then you just get up, and you're able to, you're, like, ready to go.
They're, like, 75 years? Pff, that's, like, a light nap for us. That's no big deal.
We still don't really know. Like, they keep saying, like, what, like, Enoch is a Chromacon. I don't know, that's not an established Marvel Universe thing.
From Cygnus, wherever that is.
They might just be creating a species for the purpose of this. It's the same way that Avengers created, like, the Centauri, which did not exist anywhere in the comics. They have since been put into the comic books, but at the time they were just brand new because it was just easier to make a new thing. So rather than try to get around all the, like, craziness of using using the Watcher.
Mm-hmm.
And Uatu is, like, beings, which we've just been introduced to in Guardians. Like, it was just like, all right, he's a Chromacon. He's not a Uatu, because Uatu is Stan Lee, so this is just a new thing.
This is just a stand-in for those sort of things. And the show has done that before.
Yeah. I liked him showing up on the planet.
Him and May, and I love this, like, moment where she's like, wait a minute, say that again, and he's like, Philip J. Coulson, and she's like, you!
Of course May would figure that out and hear it. And
I really appreciated this interaction, too, because he points out that by all accounts, May should not be standing, and he's like, that's really weird, and she's like, I'm Melinda May. I don't have time to sit. so that was fantastic, and it's been a while since we've seen one of the roaches up close. They, like, genuinely creepy character, like, again, very creepy design, and I know we've talked previously about, like, the budget for this show potentially being really, really small, but yeah, that was a good creature effect for such a small budget.
Yeah, I mean, because they only had to do it in, what, like, four shots total? Yeah. So that makes it easier when the season has been so budget effective because except for the Fitz episode in the past, they're doing almost nothing on location. It's all in studio. It's all, like, the same four hallways slightly redesigned. And that's probably part of it. It seems like their budget probably got a little bit slashed, so they like had to figure out how to make it simpler, and shooting all on a stage.
But yeah,
is a quick way to do it.
It's good convincing CGI. But they get apprehended by who I assumed was Scorpion in the future from Mortal Kombat, because he had that little claw thing. Just like, get over here. But it turned out not to be. And sure enough, I think Tehran was the one that pointed out that Robin could still be alive. And sure enough, we get Robin at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, that was... I have to say, well done, Tehran. That was a good guess.
I like that. I like bringing her back, like, this way. She's, like, the underground. I still don't understand how there are any people on the surface of the Earth, since it cannot possibly have an atmosphere.
It definitely looks uninhabitable.
Unless we're going to have some, like, pseudoscience or magic attached to it.
And what the rule is for whether you need a mask... or you can just walk around, and for how long you can walk around without needing some kind of mask or something.
Some sort of breathing apparatus, yeah.
Because May seemed, I don't know how long May had been on the surface, but she seemed okay. And then when we went to, I guess, the Zephyr at the end, I don't know her name, but the little girl.
Robin, yeah.
Robin, she had been, she wasn't wearing a mask either. I don't know if that was just because she was inside or what, but... yeah, I'm curious what the actual, like, rule is for that or how it works.
I think, and maybe it's better for predictions, but I'm a little bit... I love that they brought her back, but I'm also a little apprehensive because it's like... her mind was sort of shattered the last time we saw her. Are her intentions on the up and up? Does she possibly have an ulterior motive here? Where it's like, nah, the Earth's already destroyed. It's better just to destroy everything else. But it's hard to say because this looks like it's the heart of the resistance, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as a kid, she's all over the place because she's still grasping with this whole concept. But as someone who can see all of space and time, this is like Rose Tyler season two, like end of season. This is like this Bad Wolf.
Yeah.
Right now. Like, can see all of space and time as a single thing. So being able to see all that and then having to become a part of it, like, she would know, like, she's the type of person who could know to send signals because she knows when to send signals out and knows how, like, what parts of the world are going to survive. So it makes sense that she's leading this little resistance movement. Doesn't mean that she's powerful enough to stop anything, but it fits that she would be surviving at the very least.
Yeah. It's also possible that she wants to get all of, you know, all of the team back together so that she can prevent them from going back and saving the world. Because if they go back in time and stop whatever it is that blew the world to pieces, everybody who's existing in the here and now, in theory, disappears and time gets rewritten. That's kind of an abstract concept. If you were to, like, imagine yourself talking to somebody who was a time traveler, and they're like, I got to get back to the past and fix this thing so that World War II never happens. Like, on the one hand, you're like, oh, wow, that would be great if you stopped World War II. And then you go, wait a minute. If they stop World War II, does that mean, is that going to cause, like, a butterfly effect to where I'll never be born? Like, no, you can't go back. Don't stop World War II.
Because that's the thing, is that I'm thinking most of the people that they've met would probably have never been born or at least
cease to exist, for
Yeah. And also, like, with Robin, I did buy into how she was acting, and she's obviously had about 70 years. So, yeah, to process everything. So I totally bought that. And I am interested to see what her involvement is going to be when we get to the next episode, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally picturing when this all wraps up, they go back to, little girl Robin to say thank you. And she's like, has some message from the future or something, because she can see it all at once.
Yeah.
Or is this is Robin now a way for them to communicate with the past?
Ooh.
Because if she can see all of space and time, she can theoretically tell, like...
send herself a message.
Like, yeah, her younger self would know something if you told it to her in the future.
Yeah.
My brain.
It all time travel hurts.
Well, let's focus on the here and now for a minute, and talk about Flint, because we were talking about how it's kind of upsetting that Tess was essentially fridged for Flint's character development, and that sucks, and that's a discussion in and of itself. But Flint in this episode has to kind of come to grips with the fact that his friend died protecting him. And you brought this up, Rachel, was that we have this moment between him and Mac. And I'll extend it to Yo-Yo as well, because Yo-Yo was the one who initially rescued him. Do you think they're starting to form, like, a familial dynamic that Mac once had with Hope?
Yeah, and that's – I definitely think they are. And I think that because there's been talk already about parenting, and Mac, we can tell – misses Hope, and he feels a lot of guilt about that because he misses the fake Hope more than his actual daughter who passed away. Yeah. And so I think that I kind of see this happening as Yo-Yo, Mac, and Flint kind of forming this little family unit, and aww, it's adorable, and I hope it happens.
Except why did they stay behind? Sorry, I cut you off.
Okay, so what bothers me with that is that Flint said, yeah, I can fly a little bit, probably better than anyone else there.
And bye, everyone!
And he's like, okay, I gotta go protect people. No! You should stay with the team and help them.
Oh my god. That's it. You want to protect them? Help us save the world.
Yeah.
Probably.
Like, I'm actually judging Mac and Yo-Yo in this situation.
They're the adults!
Yeah! Because they're the adults, and like, yes, I get his instinct to be like, no, I'm gonna go help people. It's like, okay, you're gonna go help, like,
it's
a dozen people, maybe, will fight back against the Kree in, like, an impossible situation versus going and helping to fix the problem. Like, you're going to go... Yeah. It's like...
You're
like,
attacking the symptom, not the disease.
I'm going to go rub a little bit of ointment in one spot when you have the chicken pox versus, like, going to the doctor and getting, like, medicine.
I don't blame him because he's got a lot of misplaced guilt. His friend just died. He just got inhuman powers.
That's why we're judging Mac and Yo-Yo for not being like, no, kid, we need you to fly this plane. Because, no, you're... Flying Lola is not the same as flying a big...
I love that comment. Yeah, fly a car. Same thing.
Or less, right?
Like, how did he know what lever to pull to release from the docks? That doesn't make any sense.
You know it's bad when he goes, I don't think there's landing gear on this thing.
Like, oh, man, Coulson. I hope if this season does not end with a shot of, like, Lola, like, Mark fiving it into space, I will be disappointed. but, yeah, definitely this is 100% on Mac and Yo-Yo, because when Flint says, nah, guys, you go, I'll stay, the correct response would have been to pick up Flint because he's a child and drag him to the spaceship and then take off.
Or not even pick him up and drag him, just like Yo-Yo him into the ship and he doesn't even like, what?
I mean, that's how they saved him in the first place.
I mean, I'm pretty sure Mac is a lot stronger than Flint. I would have no problem, like, just lifting him up and holding him there until they leave.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Flint has his powers, so yeah. Mac is a little outdone in that sense.
But yeah, it's 100% like on them. They should have talked some sense into this teenager. Again, no blame on him, because not only does he have all this misplaced guilt, he was brought up in a society that very much like brought him down and very much enforced the idea of a life for a life. So Tess is dead because of him. He probably feels like he needs to throw his life away. So no blame on him. They need to act more like adults.
I do hope, and I would love to see the show, when we do eventually get back to the past, take Flint with them.
Yeah,
like, it's some timey-wimey stuff, but like, it works in a time travel sense that you could take somebody from the future and bring them back, like, especially if you're going with a more, not a Back to the Future style time travel, but more, I'm trying to think, like, what the right example is. Like, I don't know which.
Well, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is time is locked and you actively participate in it. They know that from when they met themselves.
Similar with Back to the Future. Like, if you change something, like, that thing will correct itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the Futurama style as well.
Yeah.
Time will, like, paradoxes.
Time will write itself.
Paradoxes will fix themselves. There is a version of this that works. Chat, let me know which one you think would save Flint.
I'm thinking of, like, butterfly effect, mm-hmm. because no one exactly disappears. It just things change around people, so maybe.
You can't change the past without destroying who they were, I think is one of the lines from that movie. But yeah, like, very, very similar.
Ivan says, like, on Charmed. I don't understand the reference.
Honestly, guys, we could spend 5 entire after shows trying to unravel what type of time travel we're going to be dealing with and what would work and what wouldn't and what would cause paradoxes. We've spent a good chunk of time trying to unravel that in our own minds.
Mo T has a question. I think we know the answer. Could Flint be Mac and Yo-Yo's grandkid? but hold on. We know that can't be the case because there aren't any naturally born children in this future. Remember, they have those artificial wombs.
Unless there's some kind of crazy plot thing where he is one of the few children born.
We know that there are... I don't know. It's hard to say. Because, like, Deke was talking about his father. Is like, was he a naturally born human? Like, how long have they been doing the genetic growing of humans sort of deal?
Yeah.
So that's a good question.
Actually, with the time travel, this is totally inside the Marvel version of time travel universe, because how many freaking X-Men from the future are running around in current time with no consequences? And from the past, if you talk about all new X-Men, because we have the baby versions of everyone that's just like are there. But you also have Rachel Gray. I couldn't remember her actual name. It was Rachel Summers or Rachel Gray. But like in the current day, and Cable. There's plenty.
Deadpool 2 is coming out soon. That's going to be fun. Talking about Deke, now that we're on the surface of the planet Earth and he's gotten dragged along too, it'll be interesting to see whether or not his father's still alive and sort of whether or not Deke is like, I'm in it to win it, or if he's planning on selling everybody out again. But before we wrap up, I do want to talk a little bit more about Cassius and Sinara and his brother Falnok. Because, oh my gosh, some of the most compelling stuff in this episode was just listening to them talk and watching the power dynamic shifts between the three of them. And we had somebody on Twitter bring up how much they loved the hallway scene between Sinara and Cassius, the power positioning. And I wrote it in my notes, too, because I loved the blocking in it, because it starts off with her on a lower step coming up to meet him and walking and then being higher than him when it comes to where their placement was. So I was just like, ooh, I love it when they do fun blocking things like that to show power dynamic shifts.
I love how Sinara, I didn't even know she spoke at first. So it's like now when she speaks,
she
her
said
words,
like two sentences prior to this episode.
And so now it's like everything she says, it's just especially powerful because she still doesn't talk that much. So I just love the dynamic. I love how there's so much, like the actress that plays Sinara, there's so much body language going on, like that conveys exactly how she's feeling without ever having to say anything. I think it's amazing.
I love her musical cue.
Oh,
like the Sinara battle cue is, it's the same one they use every time and I don't care. It's still good. That's all.
I think it's interesting that we finally get a plot exposition as to why Cassius is here. We know that he brought shame upon his family. We now know that it was because he chose to turn tail and run in what was undoubtedly a suicide mission. And Sinara helped him escape, so going so far as like killing his own generals who were trying to stop him from leaving because of the Kree way, I suppose. But yeah, we know that the two of them basically cut and run when everybody expected them to stay and fight, which says a lot about, I think it says a lot about the both of them. And we still don't know quite how they formed this connection, but she clearly sees something in him that the rest of the Kree species does not. And I think it ties into what you had to say, Zach, about his ability to strategize.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, he's evil, but, but he's clearly good at strategy and good, like, you need that. Like, that is an admirable trait in and of itself, and it's different from being a physically good warrior. That's what he has soldiers for. I'm intrigued to see what they do with Cassius now that he is seemingly, like, off the leash, sort of. Like, he's sort of like, I don't care what daddy has to say. I already killed my brother. He and Sonara look like they're gonna, like, just, like, get busy in his brother's blood.
I know! Like, he wiped it on his face, and I was like, are they gonna make out, like, as he's got this, like, blue blood all over him?
Creepy.
I mean, she looked like she was into it.
Yeah.
Whatever, guys.
And, like, watching it again today, the first time I watched it, I didn't sense this as much. The second time, Sonara, she was totally, like, looking at Cassius, like, go ahead, get him.
Like, she's sitting here and basically waiting for Cassius to kind of take charge of the situation. She's like, she spent the entire scene just, like, waiting on him. She's like, you know you have to do it. I'm just, like, I'm not going to do it for you this time. I'm sorry. You have to do it. Yeah. So that was interesting, too.
He's your brother.
Well, it was probably very much a very personal, like, you put my life on the line trying to appease this guy, now you need to appease me.
Yeah.
And that's why he was like, a life, you know, a life spent, a life earned. So that was cool. I am kind of disappointed that Valnak is dead now, just because I'm a big fan of the actor. especially when the actor is playing villains, because he was on 4 seasons of Turn, and he was absolutely spectacular in that. So I'm sitting here going, like, man, these guys killed Simcoe. Holy cow.
All right, should we do predictions?
We should. Yeah, do you guys have any final thoughts on the episode?
I was waiting for the bug.
Some rapid fire predictions, Zach.
I still say Flint's gonna come back to the past with us when we leave. I'm gonna be real disappointed if he doesn't. What else?
We got Ethan K.
Yeah, I've already said my.
Ethan K. In the hashtag Silly Fits didn't know which level would have Roach in 90 years in the future.
That whole scene was hilarious.
Level 3. That was great. Rachel, any predictions?
I'd like to see Flint go back in the past. I also kind of want to see Deke go back because we've seen too much of him for him just kind of disappear at this point.
Shit about you, Deke.
Discount Star-Lord. Get your act together.
I think he's going to end up being good. That's my prediction with him.
I'm still 50-50 on him. I'm like, he could very well sell these people out in a heartbeat, but maybe his dad being there on the planet will make him have a change of heart. I don't know. My prediction is just that I'm very suspicious of Robin, whether or not she's just gonna try to keep them there so that they don't erase the present. So that's my thought. I think that just about does it. Any final thoughts?
I'm excited to see what happens next week.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't see the next on because I watch on Hulu now. So we shall see.
Doesn't have the episode previews.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, again, Rachel, thank you so much for joining
us.
Awesome. This is
we'll have to have you back.
Treat. Yeah.
Next time one of those guests.
Well, thank you guys so much for watching. Zach, where can people go if they want to keep up with you?
You guys can find me all over the internet at @ThatZachWilson. Stay tuned to me on Twitter because I've got some hopefully exciting stuff coming down the pipe. There's a new sketch coming out from me and my team Turncoat this week that's just so stupid. But if you liked The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, we're doing a sketch about that. So check it out at That Zach Wilson.
Turncoat Comedy is hilarious. If you guys haven't checked them out already yet, do yourself a favor and do it. Rachel, where can people go if they want to keep up with you?
And I'm on Twitter or Instagram at Rach Goodman. I'm also on Facebook at Rachel Ann Goodman. I also host the Young and the Restless AfterBuzz show. So if anyone happens to like soaps, check me out there in about an hour.
Don't forget to follow Tehran at I Am Tehran, and don't forget to send Jesse your well wishes at JessKlein1. I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. Just keep an eye on my Twitter. I got a bunch of stuff there. Thank you guys again so much for watching. We will see you all next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.